I feel like we need hold music.
We can provide our own.
Wait. No, I got the hold music.
Don't sing.
Just give me a second, and I can find it if I can get this.
Did you get clever on us?
Yes.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
I think that's the wrong song. That's the Muppets Christmas, 12 Days of Christmas. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. I'm Fess of I'm Around. And with me this week, we have Rich Morris, right?
That's right.
Of Rich's comics blog, I suppose.
Yeah, Rich's comics blog and Yafgik, yet another fantasy gamer comic.
That's right. Now, what's the Yafgik dot, what is it? It's not .com, is it?
It's .net.
YAFGC.net. Yet another fantasy gamer comic. And of course, we've had Rich on before to talk about his 10 Doctors webcomic, which was, yeah, it had the 10 Doctor Who doctors from Doctor Who in it, all in their sort of like mishmash adventure thing, and that was a great fun time. And so he's back because he was starting a few months ago. He was starting another fun comic starring James Bond. So tell us a little bit about A Time to Kill.
I will. Time to Kill is actually the brainchild of my co-author, Richard Bracken, who, I'll go back a little bit further. After I had done The Ten Doctors, I got contacted by a theater group who had done a similarly titled story, and they wanted to make sure that we hadn't, you know, that I had ripped them off, and it turns out that I'd actually started my comic before them. And so we got into discussions after that, and they were going to do a James Bond story and were asked if I would do a James Bond comic. And I thought, well, I'd love to do that. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I just could not come up with a story that I liked. So I ended up not doing one. And then years later, I've been doing other Doctor Who crossover stories after the 10 Doctors finished.
Yes, so I saw the Doctor Who meets Jem in the holograms. I was like, yes. No way!
Yeah, I got a lot of comments about that one. In fact, I even remember it coming up in a recent... one of your shows, Webcomic Beacon.
Yeah, I think so. And I should
interviewing. We're talking about it, and it was like an example of you know, if he can do
fan fiction. We were talking about fan fiction.
If he can do that, I can do anything, right?
Yeah. I should also mention on the show we do have Melissa Kircher coming back with us from TinLizardProductions.com, and of course, First Issue. You may have seen her on. Interestingly enough, Melissa.
Yes.
Marcus was on earlier for the newscast of when we were recording this. So it's like, yay, getting the First Issue is blending over. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
You're also on another podcast called The Geek Life at thegeeklife.tv, correct?
I am.
Yes.
And I'm also starting a new blog, which launched this last week, called soundandthefoley.com, in which it's a... It's a WordPress blog, but it is centered around the research of recycled news or recycled sound clips and music themes. So, like, the Wilhelm scream is one of the things that we researched in the first week. Also, the villain theme, the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, which you hear all over the place, but nobody ever knows where it comes from. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. So that's what my newest project is.
Very cool.
And also, there's another podcast we haven't discussed yet.
Yeah. Are you getting your bad habits from me, or were you just in a lull for a while of
projects? I was in a lull for a while. I think that's why we get along so well, is because we understand this need to be constantly busy. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Is this my 10th appearance on the show?
No, actually. I'm sorry. We'll get back to you, Rich.
No problem.
This is important.
Distraction.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I did forget to introduce her to begin with. But
notice that. I wasn't sure if it was on purpose or not.
No, it wasn't on purpose.
He figured I'd just burst into the room figuratively later on.
No, I have actually collected a guest list, actually. And so... Oh, wait a minute.
Wait.
Yes, this is your 10th appearance on the Webcomic Beacon.
Sweet!
You have also one appearance on the Tropecast, which doesn't count towards the total number because that's a different show.
Yes.
So... and,
I'm two-digit numbers. Yay! For those of you who can't see me, which is everyone, I just did the Kermit arms.
Yeah, so Ben Carver, who's been on the newscast, the new newscast recently, I actually had to go back and recount everybody because I'm combining the newscast appearances as well as the regular Webcomic Beacon appearances because the shows are going to be recombining into the same show. It'll make sense later. But Ben has 22 appearances, which is a lot more than I was previously guessing. But if I count the news, count the newscast, because that's 10 alone there for him. So really blows everybody away. So I must like him or find him interesting for some reason to have him on constantly. We give each other crap. So back to A Time to Kill, Rich.
Oh, yes. Yes. I had done other crossover comics with the Doctor. Doctor Who meets Forever Knight, and Doctor Who meets Jem and the Holograms, and a bunch of other crazy ideas. And I have a whole bunch of others. Anyway, and I got to a point where I was between contracts. Professionally, I do storyboards for children's television.
Hmm.
And
cool.
And sometimes, you know, they'll be like between seasons when I have no work. So when these things happen, sometimes I'll open myself up for commissions. And so I got commissioned by a writer who wanted to do a pitch for an audio play for Big Finish to do. And it was Peter Davison's story. So he had written up the script for just the beginning. I think he'd written the whole thing, but he sent me the script for the first, 10 pages or so, and had me draw them up. And they're on the website. You go to comics.shipsinker.com. It's on there. It's... I can't remember now. Which one was it? I forget. Anyway, it's one of them. It's the Peter Davison one. And I did that. And then I got commissioned by this other guy who noticed that I was taking commissions to do comics.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he had an idea for a James Bond one. And I said, well, I wanted to do a James Bond one before, but I couldn't come up with an idea. Well, I'll see what this guy's idea is. And he came up with this idea. He pitched it to me, and I said it sounded good, so I talked back. We had sort of a back and forth talk, and we worked out the storyline that we both really quite liked. And we started working on it together. So what he'll do is we'll sit and we'll talk. He'll tell me what this next little bit is about, and then we'll sit and we'll discuss dialogue and specifics, and then I'll like draw some pages. And then while we were doing that, an artist named Christina Folker from Germany,
mm-hmm.
She started. She asked me permission to color some of my old Doctor Who stuff for her. Like she liked the pages, like she would read the comic, so she asked to do color some pages for her portfolio, like for her her gallery on DeviantArt.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, sure, why not? Because a few people have done that, and I didn't have a problem. But her stuff, when it came out beautiful. Like in particular, like it really struck me how really nice her stuff was. So I showed it to Richie Bracken. And I said, do you want her to work on it? Because I'd love to see her color the stuff and put it up on the site. And he said, yes, let's do that. So we talked to her and we worked out a deal. So what happens is now I'll do a page and I send them to him for approval and to her to ink and color. and then she inks and colors them, and we put them up on the site. Her stuff is really good.
Wow.
So it's actually the first time I've had a regular strip with ink and colored pages. Most of the time I just scribble them out. It's my style. I'm not patient with ink or colors and stuff. And when I originally started doing webcomics, it was really just something I did to warm up in the mornings. You know, like I'd come into work and I wanted to do something fun that was mine. So I would doodle some these little fantasy joke cartoons for Yafgik. And then my wife Hillary put together a website for it. I started putting them up, and so my style never changed. I always just kept that little scribbly warm up exercise type feel, and I kept that for all of them. I did a poll on my forum once to ask if people wanted me to ink and color them, and most of them said, "Nah, leave it the way it is. We like it." So yeah, so now I've actually got a color one going up.
Well, I imagine since you're doing storyboards, you're pretty fast with the, you know, just sketching it out and be done with it.
Yeah, if I have a full day to sit down and concentrate and work on them, then I can probably get about 5 done in a day.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which doesn't sound like much, really, when you think about it, but it does build up.
Oh, no, I've worked in comics before. I know how slow the process can be unless you're John Kovalik or Jack Kirby.
Yeah, and not having to ink them, really. Because a lot of people say, oh, how do you crank them out so fast? I said, well, have you looked at them? You know, they're just scribbles. You can still see all my construction lines and stuff. And I had a lot of artists say, wow, it's cool, because like, it helps me to, you know, to pose out my own stuff by seeing how you did it. You know, and I said, well, don't use me as an example, but there you go. but yeah, a lot of people use my construction lines as something to follow, an example of stuff.
So, but you've been on a little hiatus for a while with this particular comic, because I assumed life got in the way.
Yeah, two important factors that caused me to slow down on my comic production was the fact that we have two small children. I have a 5.5-year-old and now a 20-month-old, and that really kind of takes up a lot of your day and energy. And the other thing was that the studio that I'm working for got a contract with Henson Studios. It was like a big deal contract, and the schedule at work went nuts. So it was, you know, I only just had time to keep up with my stuff. I didn't no longer had time to take a little break and doodle off a cartoon every once in a while. And, you know, I come home and we had family. So it really kind of knocked the wind out of my sails. And, mm-hmm. and I started to, like, especially Yafgik used to update every single day when I was doing them regularly. I didn't miss a day for 5.5 years. and that means includes like holidays and weekends and days when the power was out or when my computer broke and I uploaded them from work and scanned them at somewhere else, you know, and things like that. And I even went to the library once to upload some. So, then all of a sudden I started skipping days. When I was in my 6th year, I started to skip days, and people noticed. They, oh, what's wrong? I started getting emails saying, are you okay? and eventually, Hillary gave me some good advice. She said, look, take some time off and get some guest strips done so you can build up a buffer again. And I said, no, I'll do this. I'll blow through it. I'll do this my way. And it didn't work. So I said, you know what? You were right. So I've taken a hiatus off of Yafgik, and I have guest art going up, and I have been working on a new storyline. So that'll start up soon. And I'm hoping to go back to my every single day schedule. I love that. It was a big thing about Yafgik. And the comics blog has always had a disclaimer at the top. It was my other comic that I did for fun. I mean, I did them both for fun, but it was my secondary one because it was fan stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like Yafgik was my own. Mm-hmm. And the comics blog was everything else. And most of it was fan stuff. It was Doctor Who fan stuff. And so it has a little disclaimer at the top, updates on a whim. You know, so and the even the 10 Doctors, when it was updating, there'd be like a break of a few months before the next one went up, and that was okay. But this time's been a bit heavy, mm-hmm. and now of course, since I'm not the only one working on it, Richie Bracken has been contacting me like every once in a while. He's like, "So, how you doing?" You know, oh yeah, right. I'll get back on it, and I have done a few more pages. So Anybody listening who is actually waiting for an update, there are actually about three more pages in the process of being colored. And I know what I'm doing next. As soon as I got some time, I'll sit down and I'll do a few more pages. And anyway, the story is all basically planned out. So there we go.
All right. And part of the big reason we're bringing this up is Bond turned 50 years old last year. Mm-hmm. And so there's a great big celebration with that. One of the things that Melissa and I have been doing is she has like this movie night every other Wednesday, and we're like, screw it, we're gonna watch Bond on Blu-ray because I got the whole set.
All of them.
You can see Sean Connery's pancake makeup on Blu-ray, I understand.
Oh yeah, it's pretty astounding.
The dark line across his chin.
The things that show up in Blu-ray are pretty amazing.
Yeah. You know, you can see nipples through dresses better.
I'm not surprised, but yeah. Now, what we've been doing is my traditional movie night is I have it on Wednesday, have people over, and it's almost always a double feature unless the movie's too long. And since the Bond movies are all like 2.5 hours long, I've been pairing them with other films each night because I don't want, you know, it's in the evening and most of us have day jobs. So I just pair it with like a 90-minute movie, so it all fits together in one compact little unit. But it's been interesting finding movies to pair with each of the Bond films, whether it's another movie that stars that Bond, or it stars Sean Connery, or Timothy Dalton, or whatever, or it's a spy movie that came out in the same year, or some of the apocryphal Bond stuff like the original Casino Royale, with Jimmy Bond, the American, the made for TV movie with Peter Lorre of all people, which is awesome, but it's, Peter Lorre was Le Chief. Yeah.
<That's> interesting.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, no, the original, for those of you who aren't big movie nerds like I am, which is why I presume I'm on this podcast, the original version of Casino Royale was done in, I think it was 1954, in black and white, made for TV, for American television. James Bond was American.
He was CIA, right?
CIA.
Felix Leiter was his Secret Service counterpart or whatever.
I think so. It wasn't Felix Leiter, if I remember right. Really? His first name was something. It was like Clarence Leiter or something like that. Oh. And for the most part, it kind of follows the plot of Casino Royale. It's all takes place inside and sets. You can tell it didn't have much of a budget for anything. And, it was just an episode of like a long-running TV show that did play adaptations and stuff like that, if I remember right. But there are parts of it, for the most part, it's kind of strange and lame, but there are parts of it that are really kind of brilliant because they actually do go for the gold and they do all the suspense stuff over the Baccarat game like it is in the book, rather than changing it to Texas Hold'em or stuff that, modern people actually understand, or people who don't have millions of dollars to play at Baccarat actually understand. But so they actually do the Baccarat game, and there's this brilliant little scene where I think it's Bond and Leiter talking about how this thing is going to go down during the Baccarat game. And they're doing this wonderful having two conversations at once thing where under the guise of Bond telling Leiter how to play Baccarat, they're actually talking about how the whole, thing is going to go. So it was very interesting. You're laying out the rules of Baccarat for the viewing audience and advancing the plot. It was actually really cool.
And I'm guessing they didn't strap Jimmy Bond to a chair, take out the bottom, and whack him with a knotted rope.
There was, not on TV, but they did have a more muted version of the torture scene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and then, Peter Lorre, How could you go wrong
with Peter Lorre?
Peter Lorre. And then after that, there was the Casino Royale where there were seven James Bonds.
Woody Allen and Peter Sellers and David Niven, who actually Ian Fleming said had in mind when he wrote James Bond to play the part.
Well, Niven, it was just, that is a man made of charm right there.
Yeah.
But also Ursula Andress was one of the Bonds, and God, this is like naming the Seven Dwarfs.
and it was Nori, Oin, Gloin, Feely, Keely, Biffer, Bofer, Bummer. Oh no, that's the other dwarves, right?
that works too. But yeah, that's the movie. God, was it directed by Otto Preminger? No, it had three different directors, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a mess, wasn't it? That film, it was all over the place.
It's bizarre, and I love
it. It's like categorized as comedy, spy, science fiction.
Yeah, pretty much.
It ends up in a spaceship at some point. I don't know. I've never seen it all the way through, but like, oh man, psychedelic, weird.
And Orson Welles shows up at the end.
Of course he does.
All right.
Oh, boy.
Why am I even on this show?
Oh, my gosh. Without you.
You put this in motion. This is why. This is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're like the chairman or the anchorman at a newscast.
Well, all right. Well, we're going to.
So I was going to ask, though, does your comic pretty much just work on, you know, James Bond from the movies, or is it also feeding from any of the stuff from the books, or?
Okay, well, I'll tell you.
Okay.
If we promise not to tell anyone else, or?
Well, I'll tell you, you know how you start a sentence with, I'll tell you, I should have a pipe in my mouth and I should be pointing the stem at you, but I do that. Well, awesome. I'll tell you. Richie Bracken, bless his soul, is an enthusiastic little bugger. And his original plan was for us to do like what I did for Doctor Who with the 10 Doctors, but for James Bond. Now, his original idea was to have every James Bond that has ever been conceived and ever played opposite all 11 Doctors. And I said, whoa.
I said I had
11 Doctors and all these villains and stuff, and I just barely kept on top of the plot. I said, and a lot of readers just kind of waited until I could explain parts of it as well. So I said, look, it'll be too complicated if we do that. Let's concentrate on James Bond, and we'll have the Doctor in it. So far in the story, I don't want to give too much of it away, but I will be dropping some spoilers. So that make this a fair warning.
Spoilers.
There will be more than one Doctor in it. So far, it's the 10th Doctor, David Tennant. There will be others. In brackets, I'm not saying how many or who, but so it will be more than just the one Doctor, and there is all the James Bonds from the movies are in it, and awesome. We are also going to be dropping references to Bond related thing. Like in Doctor Who, I made some meta references.
Mm-hmm.
In the 10 Doctors, I made a reference to like just to show you how obscure it is. There's a reference where the Colin Baker, the sixth Doctor, makes some comment about, oh, I'm not, you know, do I look like a stranger? I'm not a stranger. And Perry says, do I look like a stranger, Miss Brown? And she says, oh no, no one gets stranger than you, Doctor. And that is a reference to the fact that there was a fan film made after Doctor Who was canceled in the '80s. Someone got a hold of Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant to play the Stranger and Miss Brown in a sort of a Doctor Who, non-licensed Doctor Who fan film thing.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's subtle references like that. We will be doing things like that in A Time to Kill.
Yeah, you also had this one joke where it's like, what is it, too many bakers ruin the pie? Or
yeah, because Sylvester like McCoy's Doctor was known for messing up quotes. And as he's walking past Tom Baker and he's being followed by Colin Baker, he says, yeah, too many bakers spoil the crust, you know, or spoil the pie or whatever it was. Yeah. And Colin Baker's going, what's that supposed to mean? Yeah, exactly. A little subtle, some of them less subtle than others, but
yeah,
there are lots and lots. Like, almost every page has a million references like that in it.
You also used the fact that one of the doctors had also previously had played one of the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Commander Maxwell. Yeah, he was the Citadel guard
Yep. So he ended up pretending to be that bad guy. Yeah. It was pretty amusing.
Yeah. Perry keeps making reference to the fact that, are you guys related or something? And he doesn't know what she's talking about. I don't look anything like him. What are you talking about?
And with that, this year, to bring it all around, mm-hmm. is the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. So
that's right. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, it was a funny coincidence. not really a coincidence, I suppose, but neither Richie nor I realized that both shows were having a 50th anniversary when we started putting this thing together. It was just something we wanted to do. And after we'd got the basic plot hammered out, we started working on it and everything. We suddenly realized, wait a minute, they're both celebrating a 50th anniversary. What a crazy coincidence. We should make something of this.
And we're going to take our first break, and we'll be right back.
This program is part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. You can find and follow us on Tumblr, Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. Just search for Webcast Beacon. Have thoughts or questions on an episode? You can leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922 or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Comics, art, and writing discussions, interviews, news, and reviews at webcastbeacon.com.
That reminds me, I need to finish that watching that documentary that.
Crap, we were supposed to finish that before tonight.
I know, and I totally forgot. I was cooking all day.
So on Netflix, at least on Netflix, there is a James Bond Everything or Nothing. Is that
Everything or Nothing? Everything or Nothing. Eon Films, which makes the, you know, made the big series of James Bond films. You know, not counting the couple of Strays.
The broccoli.
The broccoli films. Eon, which is the name of the production company, stands for Everything or Nothing. So the documentary is called mm-hmm. Everything or Nothing.
And some people might have seen the GIF around Tumblr and everything of basically it's six Bonds, right? Or is it seven?
It's six.
And all of them together, like turning and shooting out of the barrel and everything. I had no idea it came from that. So I got to restart from the beginning just to see that opening sequence. It is so clever and awesome. It's, mm-hmm. But yeah, you learn a little bit about the history and the drama behind the scenes. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all of, you know, it starts out with a kind of a biography of Ian Fleming and the production of the books and, you know, the Broccolis and Saltzman and, you know, the initial trials of getting James Bond on screen and then the launch of Eon Films and going through the different Bonds. And
then the Thunderball fiasco with McCoy or whatever his name was.
McClory.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, where he, yeah, the basically, here, this is what I do. I launch into film history at random moments during all conversations. So the story about Thunderball is that the book Thunderball, when Ian Fleming wrote it, he kind of plagiarized a little bit from a book by McClory. I can't remember his first name. And there was a court suit. And McClory won, which means he basically got the rights to Thunderball. And this was before, God, well, it was like during the production of the Eon movie Thunderball. So Eon still had, it was before the rights, before Thunderball, the movie had launched into production. And the only way they could launch it into production was by actually bringing on McClory as a producer. So Broccoli and Saltzman were actually executive producers on that movie. But after that, you know, that was the way they could, you know, kind of, you know, keep McClory at bay was to actually bring him on the project. Well, you know, many years later, McClory decided, well, you know, I've got the rights to Thunderball. I'll just make my own movie. And that is where Never Say Never Again comes from.
Right.
And he got
the same story. They just changed some of the characters around.
Yeah, pretty much. And he was able to get Connery because Connery, you know, kind of hated the, you know, Saltzman and Broccoli by that time. So he kind of had this little vendetta he was working out. So that's how how Connery wound up doing this non Eon Bond film.
Did you ever see Agent 007?
No, I've never gotten my hands on that one.
See, we've only seen it through Mystery Science Theater 3000, but it's really funny.
You know, I've seen Connery's, the trailers, I've seen the clips.
Yeah, Connery's younger brother is in it, and he's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the mustache he refuses to shave off. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good times all around. Let's see here. Yeah, there. My parents ended up getting a big giant book, the James Bond, The Secret World of 007, and it's been updated since the Quantum of Solace, and apparently they update the book every so often. But it's basically got a whole lot of awesome factoids, little bits here and there about, you know, kind of like a compendium. Like, hey, you remember that? And we're just gonna explain the Zeppelin just a little bit. You're not really gonna get. It's like not like a whole cool entirely behind the scenes, but it's like the book is written as though James Bond is real, and this is like the stuff that he uses, and he's badass and stuff. So it's just not like behind the scenes or anything really. It's
okay. So it's like the world of James Bond, like the James Bond technical manual or something.
Kind of. I mean, it's got like some sketches and drawings of some. Of some technical aspects, sketches of the bad guy's evil lairs, some of Q's, a little bit of focus on some of Q's inventions, even stuff that's only barely seen, just slight little recaps of each movie. Here's the car with a bunch of diagrams, like an old old auto. Manuals where they got like the colored drawings of everything showing you behind the fender. There's, you know, like a cement jet and an ink jet and
little missile launchers
and missile launchers and, you know, so cool little things like the space station. I'm flipping through it right now. The space station from Moonraker, which I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, we watched that movie recently and thought, "Ugh."
it probably didn't age the same as how it was originally intended. I think it got better with time.
The first time I saw it was really damn atrocious.
But you look at it now, it's just like, oh my god, oh, this is like, it's like they're clearly on a black screen behind them. Look at them just quote unquote floating in space.
It's funny how those movies age and how they change in your brain and about how you remember them. You know, when you're watching them, and the one that always kills me is Dr. No. When you put Dr. No in. And it's the first one, so you got to give it some credit, right? But there's these scenes where he's just kind of walking around his hotel, and he's, you know, he looks under a telephone and he looks under the blanket and all that, and the music's going ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba, like he's setting a bomb or something, and all he's doing is looking around. Oh man, tone it down.
Yeah, and the theme of Dr. No is essentially Three Blind Mice, if I remember right. one of the interesting things they did right off the bat was that kind of big bombastic music. Mm-hmm. And they got the best guys on the planet to do that. You know, they got John Barry and Monty Norman and mm-hmm. that stuff. That music is great, but they didn't know how to use it for the first couple movies.
They figured it out by From Russia with Love, I think. And that's when it started.
Yeah, From Russia with Love is really damn good. And, you know, by the time they got to Goldfinger, it's like, yeah, they got this down.
Yeah. And then it goes into the 70s, right? With
more.
Roger Moore. And you think, I didn't realize how, like, what's the one with Paul McCartney's theme there?
Oh, Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die. That's it. It's really a blaxploitation movie. It's embarrassing.
It is. It truly is. Yep. You know, I kind of love Live and Let Die. There are some really fun things. It's some really fun stunts and stuff. But yeah, it's pretty cheesy in a lot of places.
Yeah, but I mean, is it better than Turning Japanese?
No. No, well, yeah, you know, yeah, it's exactly along those lines. Like, oh dear, like,
yeah, for as awesome as, God, that's a You Only Live Twice, isn't it? Yeah, You Only Live Twice, the one with the ninjas and the volcano lair. There are so many awesome things about that movie because you have ninjas in a volcano lair, and then you have Sean Connery being turned Japanese.
Yeah, they put some eye makeup on him, and all of a sudden, no one can tell that he's not white.
Durka, Muhammad Jihad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, racism is sometimes funny.
Yeah,
I love it. Won't be touching on in the comic.
Oh, playing that one for an audience is always so much fun, just because you get a couple people in the room who've never seen it before. They go into the Japanese transformation scene and we're, no.
Yeah. Why is it that the fortune teller with all the mystical powers in...
Oh, that's Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die. Why is it that she is white?
Yeah, I never could figure that out.
Yeah. Brother. But yeah, I mean, you gotta love these films. And we try to capture a lot of that in the comic, the feel of the things that went on. Ideally, you know, we're trying to capture the atmosphere of the movies in each different segment, but at the same time, it's a comic and I drew it, so it's all in my style. And you know how hard it is to draw all these guys to look different? I mean, at least the first five all have exactly the same description, right? They're tall, dark haired, you know, clean cut, it's combed with a part on the one side. I have to make them all look like the actor and different from each other. Like, it's harder to do than it sounds.
Roger Moore has a bunch of lines in his forehead. Wait, no, they all kind of do.
Yeah, you can always tell the old guy is Roger Moore.
At least George Lazenby has that cheek mole thing.
Well, yeah, Lazenby also has the puffy shirt.
Lazenby has a ruffly shirt.
Yep. And also, he punches things a lot.
Yes.
Including stuntmen.
Yes, wait, did he actually really do that?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did he actually punch some of the stuntmen?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he got in trouble for knocking a couple of guys out.
Jesus.
Well, he grew up in Australia. That's what you do in Australia, is you punch things.
Jesus.
Stunned? What's this stunt? I'm supposed to hit him.
He did say he never acted before. Nobody told him you don't actually punch people, I guess.
I don't know if that's him being enthusiastic or what, but yeah, he did get a little violent on the set. And in fact, we actually reflect on that when he's in a big battle scene in the beginning. How do we introduce him? Is in a big fist fight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Full contact Bond.
Full contact. Yeah. I do remember seeing the Lazenby one because I haven't, as like for like a lot of these James Bond movies, I haven't seen all of them, or I haven't seen all of them all the way. I've seen like parts of them, like whatever Spike TV used to be, whatever channel, WGN maybe, this like every Thanksgiving they would play all the James Bond movies on TV. They were also the network that also played all the Star Wars movies every year during Christmas, I think, or something like that. But so I only ever got to catch a few of them. And James Bond was limitedly on Netflix for a while, so I got to catch up on a few of those. But it's been really nice actually going through this. Like, oh, Lazenby is like, I thought people kind of made fun of Lazenby. And it's like, I'm watching it. Man, he's like, you're just beating the shit out of everybody. Wow.
Yeah. I think the only reason he's not as popular is because there were so many sequences of him being dubbed in by that guy, you know, like because he's impersonating someone else.
Yeah.
So for a lot of the movie, it's not him. It's not his voice. And it's kind of weird and uncomfortable and strange to watch. And I think that's the only reason he wasn't more popular than he was, because he was really good.
Well, I think he's actually stuck in what I feel is one of the best Bond films. I mean, if On Her Majesty's Secret Service had starred Connery or Roger Moore, it would be widely regarded as one of the best Bond films. Yeah. I think it's awesome. I mean, because
this may be sacrilegious, but my feeling has always been that if Timothy Dalton's first one was Living Daylights. If that had actually been Pierce Brosnan, that would have been the best James Bond. But
I love Living Daylights. And you know what? I love Dalton. I absolutely adore Dalton. Yeah. Mm. Especially, you know, coming right after Roger Moore, Dalton's kind of perfect because Dalton is kind of almost this no sense. I am doing spy shit now.
Yeah, he's very serious. Watching Roger Moore, he's very serious. But I found him, while there's something about him I find a little bit lizardy, a little bit cold and sort of reptilian. I'm not sure exactly what it is. There's something about the way his face crinkles up when he smiles and it's like, like there's no mirth in his face. I don't know what it is. Something that makes me uncomfortable. And I really like young Pierce Brosnan, the way he looks.
Oh, yeah.
I thought...
Oh, like, who doesn't, really? Yeah.
But, yeah, I know. I just thought that if Living Daylights had been a Pierce Brosnan film, if that had been his intro, that would have been, like, a revolution in James Bond. But it wasn't. It was, like, Timothy Dalton, who, I guess, got a lot of flack.
Well, I don't think they knew quite how to use him. And, you know, in the space of two films, they never really quite figured it out.
No, and then... he got like a good film where they didn't know what to do with him. And then he got a turd because License to Kill was awful.
We haven't gotten to that one yet.
Yeah. We're not yet done with Dalton.
Yeah. Actually we're watching License to Kill on Wednesday. I haven't seen that one since, what was it? 91 that it came out.
Well, when we started doing this comic, I managed to find all of them.
Yeah.
I watched every single one back to back, not in one night, but I mean, like, it was like,
I was going to say that'd be a while.
Well, that'd be one hell of a marathon.
There's your weekend
work while they were on in the background, you see. So I watched a few of them each day. I watched like a couple of them and I got through all of them up to that point. Quantum of Solace hadn't come out yet at the time, I think, or it had just come out. So I got that one later. And then, this new one that just came out now. My mind's a blank.
Skyfall.
That's it, Skyfall.
Which yes. was amazing.
Which was good. Yeah, I hated Quantum of Solace. That was hard to see.
That's a pretty atrocious movie.
It was so boring, but you know, I don't know if anything is as boring as Thunderball.
Few things are as boring as Thunderball.
Even the remake was better than Thunderball. The remake of Thunderball was better than Thunderball.
I'll agree with that.
But, if people haven't guessed by now, this is an episode of the Upcoming Beacon of an excuse to talk about James Bond. So
James Bond.
Because we did that for the Doctor Who episode as well. So there.
Yeah. It's a chance to nerd out on a particular theme.
Yeah. And I wanted to. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
So,
Quantum Solace, fucking boring.
The name doesn't even make sense.
You have one little tiny bit of solace, just a little bit.
Yeah, a quantified amount of feeling a little bit bad.
And it's got the MTV battle sequences, right? So every time there's a fight, you're looking at like a close-up of someone's eye, and then it quickly turns to the ceiling, and then you see the camera being whirled around, and then it's someone's foot, and you hear boof, baff, bang. You know, I don't know what's going on, and I stopped caring.
I really don't remember what happened in it. I know that there's something in the desert, and maybe there's something about water. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a water thing going on.
Or they make them drink gasoline or something.
Yeah, and I, you know, pretty much I remember the opening car chase sequence, and I went, this is directed really, really badly.
Yeah,
and I was tuned out after that.
And it was that MTV thing, because you get like this car, you know that he's in a car, and there's someone else in another car. You can't tell which one it is from the outside.
They all look alike.
It's called flip the axis, where the cars are suddenly going the wrong direction, and you get all confused.
Yeah, they're breaking the 180 degree rule left and right, and the shots are too fast. You can't track what's going on. You don't know who's chasing who.
Suddenly there's a door missing. What?
And there are a few things I find as miserable as bad action editing.
Yeah.
And
it is.
That was just so bad.
And another beef I have is when they have battle sequences or like one of these action sequences where they're swinging the camera around, right? Like as if it's handheld camera, someone's running with the camera, you know, to make it look like you're really there. Well, I got news for you. Eyes don't work like that.
Right.
Your eyes, when your eye shifts direction, your nerve pinches off so that you can't see for a second, like for a flash. So you're actually getting cuts.
It happens when
a movie being cut than a camera swinging around. Because if it was, then we'd all be puking our brains out all over the place if the world was swinging around every time we looked somewhere else.
Yeah, your brain does that when you turn your head real fast too. You're actually your eyes shut off for a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there are ways to do that kind of cinematography right, but very few people have figured out how to do that.
I think it only works if you're supposed to be capturing actual footage from an actual handheld camera.
Yeah, and
it really shouldn't be a whole film.
Yeah, and, you know...
Or if it moves less
than that. I think one of the few places I've ever seen it done really well is Chronicle. I know Fess saw a Chronicle, but...
Oh, yeah. But the thing with that, it wasn't like a lot of like... where it's a close-up and it's jiggling, so you can't... And it's not held long enough, so your eye can't focus on, wait, who am I? And then the scene's gone, and you know, it's a matter of too much shaking and too close, and then duration. So it's like those three key things. And that also would go for a 3D, apparently. You know, you need a longer cut and whatever, but
mm-hmm. Yeah. And with Chronicle, they found an excuse to do handheld shooting with a Steadicam, essentially. Mm-hmm. Because the concept behind Chronicle is it's three kids who find out that they have three high school kids who find out they have superpowers and that they can fly and stuff like that, and one of them has, you know, essentially psychokinesis. So he's like picking up objects with his mind, including the video camera. So they're like, they're chronicling their own, you know, oh my God, we're flying. And the camera's flying with them.
Oh, okay.
And so it's a little cinema verite with the, you know, jiggling a little bit, but they have an excuse to kind of keep it steady.
Well, what they're going for is sort of like the found footage method.
Well, quote unquote found footage, but they're doing long shots, long takes, and you know, even though they're moving the camera like it's handheld, they're keeping it fairly steady. It was directed really well for doing the found footage thing.
Ooh.
But this isn't about that movie.
No, it's not.
Even though it is awesome.
Pointing out how utterly wrong Quantum of Solace is.
Right. Yes. and then the latest one, the one from 2012, in which the Blu-ray complete box set had a sleeve for when you bought it on Blu-ray, so you can put it in with the collection, the 50 collection. And that was pretty sweet. I still have yet to get the Blu-ray for Skyfall. I'm waiting for the price to come down. But
So was Skyfall the official anniversary celebration movie of James Bond?
I would have to say so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the last one of the Bond 50. I mean, there's the sleeve right there. It's to 2012. And so,
right.
It was sort of like, a rebirth movie too, in a way.
Because I read that, the old guy, I keep calling him, Groundskeeper Willie. That was supposed to be originally when it was written. It was supposed to be Sean Connery playing him.
Yeah, I know.
He said, "Oh no, that would distract from there, take you out of the world." So he nixed that idea, and I thought that was a bit of a shame because that would have been awesome. Daniel Craig and Sean Connery.
God, who was that? It wasn't Albert Finney, was it?
No. Yeah.
Shit! I cannot bring up his name.
I don't know. He was good.
Yeah.
He was good, but it was a shame that he didn't go with the. Or offer Sean Connery the part anyway, because that would have been really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see here. What am I doing for time? We're going to take one little bit break.
It was Albert Finney.
We're going to take one more break.
My wife just confirmed it was Albert Finney.
Okay. Sweet. I'm smarter than I thought.
You're so humble.
I give myself credit where credit is due. Come on.
Yeah, but you're so rarely wrong. All right. Taking a break.
No, isn't it usually put a cool song at this break?
Yeah, what I normally try to do is try to find a pod safe musical piece that is somewhat related to the topic at hand.
Might I offer a suggestion?
I think you should find the theme from the Casino Royale with David Niven. Bond sitting at Casino Royale.
There's that. And my co-author recorded a song, which was the theme for our webcomic.
Give me that. And I will stick that in during the break.
Sure. You can tell I'm a regular listener because I knew that the first break was a commercial. And the second break was going to be one of your songs.
Yeah. You've figured me out.
We go through changes, oh yeah.
Oh, Vess.
So, yes.
Something I wanted to say to you since I've been listening to the podcast recently.
Yes.
Machismo.
Machismo?
The punchline is machismo. I believe that's how it's pronounced, not machismo.
Well, yeah. Kelly, who's on the show,
is wrong.
Whose comic it is, says machismo.
I know. But she's wrong.
All right. I got
pedant.
I got Kelly here. Let's see if she's.
Oh, that might be. Yeah, that's true. It might be regional. That's true. It might be regional dialect. I could be wrong.
She's in Canada.
She's Canadian.
She's Canadian. So maybe that's they. Maybe they say machismo in Canada. And
which part of Canada? We're bigger than
Ontario.
You. Ontario. I don't know. Anyway, I suppose it's possible. But,
Actually, she said, it, according to her Skype, it's MB/ON Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, that's like Ontario.
Manitoba or Ontario. I don't know.
Okay.
Where do you hail from again? Aren't you Australian?
That's not how I say it.
where do you hail from, Rich?
Originally, I was born and raised in Montreal, but my parents were British, so I had sort of a Anglo-Quebec.
Interesting.
Britain background, and Hillary, my wife, is from Toronto.
Toronto.
I have to pronounce it Toronto, and we now reside in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
I hear Halifax is lovely.
Mm-hmm. It's very pretty. The weather sucks, but it's good. Sometimes
it just makes you appreciate the nice weather all the more. I know this because I'm from Minnesota.
Oh, the weather is nice sometimes, but it's just you never know from minute to minute what it's actually going to be. So if you step outside on a nice, clear, warm day and you've got your T-shirt on and your shorts and everything, it'll suddenly start to rain. Mm-hmm. And then when you get your umbrella up, it starts to snow. And when you get your snowsuit on, the sun comes out, warms it all up. And then when you take your hat off, it hails on you. And that's just from my house to the end of the parking lot. We got four fronts apparently, and they fight it out continuously over our heads.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's all those pressure zones, you know. They gotta.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yes.
I don't have a good meteorological joke for that, so.
Meteorological?
Meteorological, whatever.
The study of meteorology.
Technical diplophogies.
So.
Okay, so what do you need me to talk about? The comic or the Bond stuff some more? Or?
I don't even. And I'm keeping all that we just talked about, too. That seemed to work.
Oh, are we? Okay.
You know, because it's kind of, you know, whatever. James Bond. We have, well, one of the biggest thing. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Have either of you played the video games at all?
I played the PlayStation 1 GoldenEye. I used to play it regularly with a friend when I was in Montreal.
Well, that doesn't exist. It was on the N64.
Was it?
Yeah, there's nothing James Bond on the PSX. So.
Was it? Oh, okay. Then yeah, it must have been something else. Yeah, because I've never been like a console guy, so I don't know.
Yeah, not.
He had this thing, and we used to play it. You know, player versus player. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, there was some that some James Bond games that came out on the PlayStation 2 and other systems later. But the first couple were on the N64, and it's the GoldenEye 007 game, which is basically everybody's played with paintball mode and Donkey Kong mode with giant heads and arms and you know, whatever, slappers, you're just going around, you know, judo chopping everybody with no guns. So that's coming up in a few weeks at Melissa's, where it's going to be the GoldenEye 007 movie night, the Pierce Brosnan's, foray, beginning of his career. And I'm going to bring my N64 over with controllers and God damn it. We're going to play some GoldenEye.
Awesome. That was great. I loved hunting the other guy down, and yeah, we had a great time with that.
You just got to watch out for the ones that are just watching each, just only winning because they're watching each other's screens where they are.
I know where you are. I'm right behind you. My brain didn't have enough power to work that way, so I was always stuck staring at my screen. All of a sudden, he'd jump out from in front of me, and I'd fall down. But I had fun anyway.
I would probably be a very bad player. of GoldenEye.
Yeah.
I just never did the console gaming thing.
Yeah,
I'm not used to that.
I'm not that great at it. My brother always kicked my ass at it. He could. It was the way the controls were set up. I just even with today's like first person shooters where you got like the aim and look with the analog sticks and just something about that. I can't do that with my thumbs. I remember when I bought Halo 3. Because I had like a coupon or something, I thought, you know, I'm going to give this a shot because I got, you know, a 360. So let's give this a shot. And here I am. I'm just walking around in circles, looking up at the sky, down at the ground, just not knowing where the hell I am because I can't figure this out. And I'll probably be terrible when I bring the game over too. I actually got to plug it in and practice a bit first too.
So you can teach the rest of us how to play.
I'm worried about just being the only one. I'm just worried about that everyone else is going to be better and I'm just going to die all the time. And then I'm going to not want to play and take my game home. But
all right.
No, well, you'll probably wind up. Oh, that's right. You're not working that night. So.
I took off because of we're going to be doing GoldenEye.
So you play video games at my place.
Yes, with people. You know, it'll be fun. It'll be an event.
It will be.
Yes.
And there will be a lot of wine involved.
And I'll bring a cheese, ham, and crackers again. So
awesome! Cheese, ham, wine, crackers, GoldenEye.
Shooting each other in the face. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, you really need a lot of cheese and a lot of ham if you're going to watch some James Bond movies.
Yeah.
And corn. You need corn as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's corn. There's corn.
Pierce Brosnan was my introduction, I think, into James Bond. I mean, as far as really. I mean, it might not have been. I might have seen the other ones. But it was like, this is the Bond I got really excited about because it's in the theater and it's a new James Bond. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I mean. And so, you know, I thought GoldenEye was freaking awesome, and I enjoyed the other movies as well. But I apparently don't remember them. I apparently remember them more fondly than others.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens when we get to those movies.
Yeah, I have nothing against Brosnan as Bond. I just think he was saddled with some unfortunate writing.
Yeah, well, Pierce
for a lot.
I find they get criticized for, you know, the unbelievable over-the-top action for the most part, which, you know, is ridiculous when you think back at what the whole genre has always been about. It's just more of the same, really. There is some atrocious writing in the later ones. Mm-hmm. And then there's, what's her name from Space Troopers or... Starship Troopers.
Oh, and Denise, what's her nose?
They cast her as some kind of a scientist. And
yeah, like, there goes my suspension of disbelief right there.
Didn't work. But, I mean, it introduced Judi Dench as M, which was awesome. That was a great choice. She was really cool.
I thought Dom Judi Dench came in with Craig.
No.
She was
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I totally forgot. But was Judi Dench... Was Judi Dench M from the beginning of Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah, she was M in GoldenEye for the first time. That's the first time we see her.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was the end. It was the swan song of Desmond Llewellyn's Q, sadly. And then John Cleese took over. Now, when they introduced John Cleese, it was ridiculous. It was in the worst movie, and he was a total buffoon, and it was just silly. It was a little too Python. But when Llewellyn had died and he became Q, he was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish they'd kept him as Q for a couple of movies at least, because he finally become this awesome character with a great banter. And of course they said, oh no, we're going to make this all serious now. We'll get rid of everything funny. You know, we got rid of all the traditional stuff. They got rid of the gun barrel sequence at the beginning. They got rid of everything. You know, let's reboot it. Start it all over again from scratch. That's always a good idea.
I think it worked out okay.
I think it without.
I really love Casino Royale. I think the Craig Casino Royale. I think it's a fantastic film.
I agree that it's an excellent movie. We enjoyed it a lot. But I have a problem with movies that are established serials that they feel they need to reboot, and that always irks me.
Well, here's the thing, though. nobody's taking away your older Bond movies.
No. No,
the thing about Bond is it does kind of migrate. It's a chameleon that changes over time and tries to kind of match whatever era it's in. And so I think it's totally fair to reboot it every once in a while.
Yeah, unlike Marvel, where everything is in continuity and things don't make sense anymore.
Into this discussion, that's a different universe entirely.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, reboots are relevant now, but I thought Skyfall was. I saw it with a group of people at a con, and somebody made the comment. It feels like, excuse me, the Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace would be the two beginning James Bond. Everything before Daniel Craig happened, and then Skyfall happened. Kind mm-hmm. of. Sorta.
Well, no.
Somebody mentioned it like that, but it doesn't really...
But that doesn't work either. No, if you look at
not by the end of the movie, no.
I know, but I think just because it's Casino Royale was the, hey, this is the new guy on the job, and he's learning to be James
Bond. You've got
to
look at James Bond films in their entirety as a gigantic Mobius strip. Okay? You start with Dr. No, and everything sort of trickles into a continuity, and you can accept the changing face of James Bond in two ways. In one way, it's not our real name. It's the name they give to the 007 agent. And he retires and he gets replaced, or he, or what have you. And so, and then he'll come back, right? They actually brought him back after George Lazenby came, Sean Connery came back, mm-hmm. and then Roger Moore. There's a continuity to it, but you can accept that. That's one way you can accept it. Another way that, like, the attack we took in the comic, which kind of falls apart, is that he's a Time Lord and he regenerates. But, you know, yeah. That has its own problems, which we've kind of ironed out in a very contrived way.
Please tell me that the Aston Martin is a TARDIS.
It's not. But it is going to have a race with Bessie.
Ooh, nice.
Now, as far as the rest of the group is concerned, the same thing happens. Moneypenny is a code name. It's not a real person. So mm-hmm. she's different every once in a while as well. Okay, and then you've got the M's, and they go through all the different Bonds, and then finally you get to, let's get to Pierce Brosnan, where suddenly there's Dame Judi Dench takes over. She's M, the first female M. Wow, she's awesome. She's the new M. We have a new Bond, and then we have another new Bond comes in, Daniel Craig, who gets started right from the scratch, right? She sees him, and he comes back. And it continues from there, right? As it progresses through the eras, through the technology, through time. And then finally you get to Skyfall. And Dame Judi Dench dies. And then they bring in the new M into the new headquarters, which is actually the old headquarters. And the whole thing starts all over again. You have to watch Skyfall and then watch Dr. No. And you go through the whole thing again. And then when you get to Skyfall, you put Dr. No back on. The whole thing is a massive chronic hysteresis. And there's no breaking out of it. You're trapped for all eternity, stuck watching James Bond movie after James Bond movie, back and forth through time, until somebody comes and breaks the loop and frees you, and the Daleks take over the Earth.
Okay, and then there's a time dilation, and then you get seven James Bonds in one place at Casino Royale.
Yes,
I see how this works now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now we had talked about bringing other James Bonds into it, right? Because there's a drawing of the original James Bond that someone had done for either Ian Fleming had done it or someone had done for him. And it was like what James Bond looks like before there was ever a movie. So
Fleming had done it, actually. I think
he'd done it himself. Yeah. So yeah. We're going to use him as like one of them as well. And then we were going to have all the guys from all the Casino Royales and all that kind of stuff.
You're going to have Jimmy just kind of like just there and then gone.
Yeah. So we talked about all that, and I said, you know what, that's far too confusing, and let's just stick with the movie ones, and we can make references on the side to things like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of the tack we're taking is the Time Lord. He regenerates. I mean, if you've read any of it, you know that they discussed the James Bond, like the Bond James Bond line is actually some kind of a mental block that causes you to forget that he's a secret super spy, right? Some kind of a hypnosis thing that changes your brain. And a perception filter, that's what it is.
Perception filter.
Yeah. And the doctor knows it, and he tricks his companion with it. And yeah, so we're playing with all those aspects of it.
You just
got to start updating again.
Yeah, well, like I said, we've got 3 pages on their way, and I have like a written out plan for the next sequence, which is going to be really cool.
Actually. Well, if you just got rid of the kids.
The kids?
Your kids.
Oh, my kids. I don't know. Well, James Bond is it? Well, there's James Bond Jr.
Oh, no, we're not. No. No. Oh, God.
IQ.
Hey, look at that. It's time to end the show.
No! I was just going to bring up Spy Kids. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So,
yes.
So just to show what a masochist I am,
yes.
I've decided to celebrate Doctor Who's 50th anniversary by doing the 23 Doctors, as if 10 weren't bad enough. And now 6 James Bonds and Doctors as well. I've made myself a promise that I would start the 23 Doctors for the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who to commence on the 23rd of November.
Wow. That seems like a bold proposal.
It is. And I said to myself, self, I said, what are you thinking? And I said, just do it, because the 10 Doctors was really good. It worked out really good. I still get a lot of hits. People still, I mean, I came on the show the first time because of the 10 Doctors, and it was pretty cool. I got a lot of, it got me a lot of publicity and everything. And I thought, well, I can do a sequel to it, but I got to up the ante. I can't just do the 11th Doctors. Everyone will be expecting that. So.
Nobody expects the 23
Doctors. I figured out how to get 23 Doctors into this story. and I'm going to do it by gum.
So where are the other 12 Doctors coming from?
The other 12. Okay, well, there are actually 11 Doctors in the 10 Doctors. All my Doctor Who stuff is in its own continuity.
Okay.
So every time you see like one of my in the webcomics blog, every time you see another Doctor Who strip, it has something to do, or it is in the same universe as the 10 Doctors. And the 10 Doctors, I actually had 11 Doctors in it, because the second Doctor projects an incarnation that is somewhere between the second and third Doctor. And that was a reference to a fan film that was made where they actually found a guy who looked like a combination of John Pertwee and Patrick Troughton. And so they came up with this story. It's called Deceived. I think it's called Deceived or something like that. And I'll send the link for that too. And they got this actor. They came up with a story where he's somewhere in between. So I thought that was really cool. And that guy really does look like a combination of the two actors. So I brought him in. The second Doctor projects him. So I've got him. So there you've got 12 right off the bat. The 11 from the show and this guy. There were stage plays. There were other films. There were all kinds of things. And if you look for them, there's millions of them that have other Doctors, like other actors playing the Doctor. And I found...
like Peter Cushing.
Exactly, Peter Cushing. And there was Trevor Martin. And there was a whole bunch of others. And so I've managed to find the other 11 important Doctors, the ones I feel were important aspects. I've got female Doctors in there, which I think is really important. Racially diverse Doctors.
What about
Curse of Fatal Death?
No, the one yes, where well, the guy who plays Bean.
Yeah, that's Curse of Fatal Death.
That's Curse of Fatal Death. That's Rowan Atkinson.
Thank you, yes.
Along with Jim Broadbent and Hugh Grant and Joanna Lumley. Boy, Joanna Lumley should play the Doctor.
She played it very well.
She was awesome. I want Joanna Lumley as the Doctor again.
Okay. I will admit that I have a reference to that, but not all of them.
Okay.
All right. We do got to end the show.
Okay.
But look forward to that. Look forward to Rich's stuff at comics.shipsinker.com for not just the Doctor and Bond, but his other projects as well, as well as yet another fantasy gamer comic at yafgc.net.
That's right. Which is my main webcomic. I should have a chat with you about that one sometime. But that one's 6 years strong now.
Let me write that down. Gamer comic. All right. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah, but yeah, you know.
We got. We have the end of the episode of the because we helped. We wanted to freaking talk about it. Episode of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. James Bond, everybody.
Yay!
Once again, Rich Morris returns from Rich's comics blog at comics.shipsinker.com and yet another fantasy gamer comic. We already mentioned that.
We did.
Links are in the show notes, and we welcome Melissa back, of course, from the geeklife.tv podcast, as well as Yay. First issue.
Yay!
Yay!
And TinLizardProductions.com and SoundInTheFoley.com. And what other sites do I have?
I stopped listing mine. So.
TinLizardProductions.com has all the links. So.
There you go. And that is it. And we'll see you next time.
I didn't hear all of it.
You know, oh, it's my wife. She said she has a tiny crush on you. She doesn't know who you are, but she, from what she's eavesdropped on, she has a tiny crush on you already.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I have a tiny crush on Melissa, too.
You've stuck around that long, yeah. After year three, I kind of had an inkling that something was going on. Our four-year anniversary is officially on Tuesday.
Oh, so. Congratulations.
Hooray. Oh, thank you. Oh,
thanks.
Wait, which means we ate ourselves silly this weekend. So
ate ourselves silly for a real occasion,
yes,
I should say.
It was awesome.
Versus the earlier in the week in which it was just Easter.
Yes.
Which is in itself a good excuse to eat yourself silly.
Whatever we have to tell ourselves.